Good morning, everybody. This is Jeremy Brunson, Interim Director for Nebraska Medicaid here at Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate everybody taking time out of their busy days to jump on the call with us this week. In addition to myself, we also have several other folks here at the State Office Building that are in the room with me, notably my peers, our Deputy Directors for Population Health, Carissa Mushek, and our Deputy Director for Policy and Regulations, Nate Watson. So we have quite a bit of content, I think, that we can update providers on this morning regarding information that we've shared with our stakeholders and the public over the course of the last week. Before I get into that information, I do want to reiterate our thanks for the continued work that our providers are doing in the communities. And also, I want to thank you for the feedback and questions that have helped us here at the state guide our direction and really navigate through these unprecedented times that we're all dealing with together. So thank you for that. We obviously had a new call-in line created for today. The purpose behind that was solely to increase the capacity. So with this new line, we are able to get about more than double the number of participants than we have previously been able to accommodate on our conference line. So we noted that on the last few calls, there were a small number of participants that were not able to join after the start of the call because we reached our capacity. And we encourage you to continue to participate on these calls in the future with this increased capacity. We are going to stay true to the form of how we've been delivering these calls, in that we are sharing content here from our state office building and accepting questions and feedback via our email address. That's a shared mailbox that we monitor during the call, and we welcome all content questions and feedback, not only during the call, but anytime that you run into a scenario or situation where you have questions for us related to the COVID pandemic. That email address is dhhs.mltcexperience@nebraska.gov. So today, we wanted to start off with just some general update on where things are at that we've been communicating with you about in the past. Specifically, first, we wanted to talk about our Appendix Ks that were submitted to CMS that amend certain provisions of our home and community services waiver for both the Medicaid program and our sister division, the Division of Developmental Disabilities. The agency did receive a handful of questions from our federal partner, CMS, Sunday night. We spent yesterday with, in coordination with our sister division, responding to those questions and finished prepared responses to those questions last night. So the ball is kind of back in our federal partner's hands. And I know and trust, based on our great working relationship with them, that they'll be working through the responses and providing us with an update or approval in the near future. As soon as we have any additional information on the appendix case, whether that's approval or otherwise, we'll make sure to update our providers and our stakeholder community and certainly post the approval letters on our website. Regarding our emergency state plan amendments, we did receive questions, as noted last week, I believe, on our call on our SPAs, and have responded to questions on our SPAs, and are kind of in a similar situation. We're waiting for approval or additional follow-up from CMS at this time. And again, we will share any updates that we have with our interested parties as soon as we have information to share. We are also continuing to implement components of the 1135 waiver, which we have approved. What we're doing at this point is certain aspects are already in operation, but there are other pieces of the 1135 that require some concurrence of our state laws that we are maneuvering through at this point in time. And as soon as we have any additional information, we'll be happy to share that with our provider community as well. Obviously, this is a very fluid situation, and we continue to watch very closely the guidance that's being shared for the public from our federal partners at CMS. That includes information that even just as close as yesterday was shared with the public around cost sharing for long-term care clients. We also know that there is additional guidance coming very soon on additional topics that the state is looking forward to receiving regarding random moment time studies and things that are related to our school-based services. From the state perspective, we have several more items that we are currently working on to provide further guidance to providers around. Things such as hospital facility-based non-acute or subacute stays, operationalizing and requesting the authorities around pay for that type of care for Medicaid beneficiaries. We also are working on further guidance on prior authorizations for provider-specific services. And then I know that we've also received very recently just some more clarification and questions from providers around what the Medicaid allowable amounts, the pay rates, fee schedule amounts will be or are for some of the services that we communicated that are newly reimbursable. There are codes that we've been adding through emergency spots. So we'll get some additional guidance very soon. I think our target is by the end of the week. I know last week providers experienced a flurry of five provider bulletins or follow-up FAQs that were posted really Friday. I think one posted Monday of this week, yesterday. Those items that we did in the last week or so include a PASS FAQ, which is personal assistance services or personal care services, behavioral health telehealth follow-up guidance, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy telehealth guidance, a new provider bulletin regarding telehealth for dentistry or teledentistry, and some additional guidance around long-term care facilities and just dealing with patients that are quarantining or transferring between different institutions. So those are some of the examples of the most recent guidance that we provided in the last week. And as we stated, more topics will continue to be throughout the course of this week as it's available. What I would like to take a moment and share is, obviously, some of the guidance that we're issuing from the state Medicaid office is new. Other pieces of it are updates or clarifications to prior guidance been issued. And this is where we would reiterate our thanks to our providers, because we're working, as you are, with a lot of content. Our interest is to try to get information and guidance out as quickly as possible, with the other understanding that we're not going to be able to be comprehensive in all cases because we are working through it very quickly. And we do value your feedback. Our goal is to help. And if there are any questions that are being created as the result of the guidance, we want those questions so we can provide clear guidance when possible. And we're not going to be perfect. So we do want to do our best, but we also want to be expedient. So we appreciate your patience. We really appreciate the thoughtful questions and follow-up that you all are providing us, so that way we can work together with you. Know that that's our commitment, is that we are committed to working with you, being responsive during these times. So really, this is majority of the content that we had ready to share with provider community this morning. So we're going to take a moment, take a look at our provider mailbox, and just take a look at any questions that might have come in leading up to this call and during the course of this call so far, and see if there are any items that we can address on the phone based on questions that have come in.
Hi, good morning. This is Carissa, Deputy Director for Population Health. And we want to provide some clarifications and some guidance for a category of questions that we've received that really focus on face-to-face care that would have been provided to patient but is now provided either through telehealth or telephone. So for those providers that do direct patient care, we want you to use as appropriate the telehealth options. Telehealth is audio and visual. In the event that the patient does not have access to telehealth, then you are able to use telephone in some certain scenarios and for some services. And you can look to the provider bulletins and the FAQs on direction and guidance on when telephone is appropriate. And we wanted to clarify that if you are providing a service over telehealth that normally you would do by a face-to-face visit, you would use the procedure code and that you would have for that face-to-face visit and just add the GT modifier that lets us know you did that through telehealth. As a provider, you do need to just remember to keep the patient safe, use the interaction or the service level that is most appropriate to meet the needs of the patient. And if you are going to use a specific code to bill for a service, make sure that you can meet the service definition of that code. We have had some questions about some of the temporary codes that we've released. Those temporary codes were specific for the COVID situation. Those can be found on Provider Bulletin 20.06. And those codes are specific to just telephone management. And these are not intended to relate to replace existing service codes or CPT codes. These are just intended to allow an opportunity for the provider, the physical provider, the behavioral, like the mental health provider, or for the dentist to do a 5-minute telephone virtual check-in or triage of the patient. Again, information on that can be found on Provider Bulletin 20.06. Those telephone codes are temporary, and they are not intended to replace the normal CPT or CDT codes that you would use to provide a service. We're going to provide a bit of additional information on the teledentistry codes. This information just came out at the end of last week, so if you have an opportunity, go and take a look at that. And again, all this information can be found on DHHS Medicaid's Provider Bulletin page. There is an option up at the top for you to enroll to receive any updates or automatic alerts to your email address. Anytime information is added to this page, and we would encourage you to sign up for that. So the teledentistry update is Provider Bulletin 20-08. And for teledentistry, there are actually two options or two supports that are provided for dentists. The first one I'm going to address is a telephone code that is temporary. It is providing that opportunity for that virtual check-in or just a consultation between a dentist and a patient, and it is audio only. This is a temporary code, and it is that D9999 code. So in those situations where you're only able to provide telephone consultation, which is really a virtual check-in or a triage for your patient, you would use that telephone-specific code. For other teledentistry interventions, there are three codes that are available that are problem-focused, limited problem-focused, or specific to a post-operative or post-procedure office visit. When using those codes, it is the same service definition as if you were going to provide that service face-to-face. So it needs to use audio-visual interaction with the patient. And when using those three codes, you would include the teledentistry code of D9995. And this code lets us know that the service was provided through telehealth. So take a look at that Provider Bulletin 20-08. And continue to send in any additional questions that you might have specific to teledentistry. We've had some general questions come in about some rate methodology for day rehab. We continue to work with our partners that provide this service. And at this time, there is no change to that rate methodology, but we will continue to keep an eye on the situation and work with those service providers to ensure we can meet the needs of the patient. We've also had some general questions on the SUD, the substance use disorder waiver, and whether that is affected at all with the expansion waiver. The substance use disorder waiver is separate from the expansion waiver, So any changes to an expansion does not change a substance use disorder services. Any patient that is Medicaid eligible that meets the service definition need for substance use disorder has access to all of those services.
Good morning. This is Nate Watson, Deputy Director for Policy and Regulations. I'll address a couple of the questions. The first, when we refer to our sister division, there are five divisions, five parts of the Department of Health and Human Services in Nebraska, and Medicaid and long-term care being one of them. When we refer to our sister divisions, we're primarily talking about developmental disabilities. They administer our home and community-based waivers. So the age and disabled waiver, the traumatic brain injury waiver, they also administer a day service waiver and a comprehensive services waiver. So when we say sister division, that's usually to whom we're referring. We received a question about adult expansion, sometimes just called expansion. Any of those specific questions that you might have, you are welcome to contact me directly. And my email is nate@nebraska.gov. The only piece I'll mention on that for purposes of this call today is there's been some news in that regard with regard to adult expansion the last week. Our federal partners are understandably quite focused on the current health pandemic, so they're not able to get our so-called 1115 waiver approved at this time in time for our launch of our program. So we're going to go ahead and move forward. We're going to still take applications on August 1st for adult expansion with benefits to start October 1st. Individuals will start in the basic tier, which is a comprehensive, robust package of services comparable to what many folks receive if they receive insurance through their employment would receive. The ability to earn enhanced benefits, that is prime, as opposed to basic, which is the addition of dental, vision, and over-the-counter medications, will start once we receive federal approval of our 1115 waiver from the federal government. Certain groups, three groups, will go ahead and receive prime now because due to their current temporary conditions, they'll be eligible to receive prime now. And those are 19 and 20-year-olds, pregnant women, and those folks who've been determined to be medically frail. But if you have any additional questions with regard to expansion, you're welcome to email me directly.
So this is Jeremy. One additional question that we've received that we actually were discussing as a team here at Medicaid earlier this week was whether or not we would be sharing the content of our calls on our website. We are going to be doing that. So beginning with our call that we held last week, we have been recording those calls, and we will be looking to post those recordings on our website. And we'll provide an update as soon as we're able to get those recordings posted on our website or to ensure that there's a way for the providers to go back and re-listen to them, or for providers that were not able to attend have the ability to listen to those calls later on. We also do have meeting content notes from prior calls that we are putting together and will post for any calls that we held prior to beginning to record them last week. So that content will be posted to our website as well.
We're going to take just a moment and see if, take a look at the mailbox and see if there are other questions that we can address on the call. For those that we don't address on the call, just as a reminder, we do monitor this mailbox throughout the day. And for those that email in, we do respond to you directly.
received some questions that lead me to the point of during the duration of the public health emergency and up to 30 days thereafter, individuals who are currently eligible to receive Medicaid will stay on Medicaid during that entire time period. So that you know, we continue to work the cases. Our staff will continue to determine. So if an individual would otherwise no longer have been eligible for Medicaid, we will still note that in the records. However, during the duration of the public health emergency, no one will lose Medicaid coverage who is on. We received a question about over resources and the limits with regard to being eligible for Medicaid. Again, even if an individual is over resourced during, if they're already on Medicaid, they'll continue to be on Medicaid during the pendency of the public health pandemic. So that you know, the normal resource limits would otherwise apply, except for certain enhanced unemployment benefits or the so-called stimulus money that individuals will be receiving either direct deposit or by check. Congress specifically exempted those from being counted for purposes of income or resources for Medicaid. But in any event, to the extent someone is already on Medicaid and now may have had an increase in income or increase in resources and would otherwise no longer be eligible, they nonetheless will stay on Medicaid for the duration of the public health emergency.
Thank you, Nate. And this is Carissa. Just want to circle back and some general questions about what service definition means. So when providing a service to a patient, the definitions that are in the CPT or CVT code book still apply. And then in addition, if there are any frequency limitations for that level of service, those still apply as well. Providers assess all of your patients, find what works best to meet their needs. If there is an acute need, then you can use the appropriate interventions or the appropriate billing codes to meet the needs of those patients. And then just as a reminder too, we have some patients that just are not comfortable being seen through telehealth and they are still requesting to be seen in person. We ask that if you have a patient or a client that is requesting those services, that you work with them to find a provider or a way to meet those needs if they are wanting that direct connection or that connection in person.
At this point, it looks like we've address nearly every question that's come into our mailbox, and we'll go ahead and end our provider call for today. As we mentioned, we wanted to thank you for your regular participation on our calls, for the feedback and questions that you continue to submit to us to help guide our response to the public health emergency, and really reiterate our appreciation for the work that you're doing in our communities. Not only with our beneficiaries, but certainly for our fellow Nebraskans and neighbors in our communities. Thank you for all you do, and we look forward to sharing more information in the coming week and talking with you again next week. Thank you.